This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Christopher Cruz. President Biden said today while he is relieved the federal budget crisis is over for now, there never should have been a crisis to resolve.
The truth is, we shouldn't be here in the first place. We shouldn't have gotten here in the first place. It's time to end governing by crisis and keep your word when you give it in the Congress.
A temporary spending bill was passed just hours before the midnight deadline and signed into law by the president. But three big issues have not been resolved.
Do we make deep spending cuts? Could there be reform on the border with immigration and aid to Ukraine?
Greg Valliere at AGF Investments says if those issues are not resolved, particularly funding for Ukraine, there could still be a shutdown when the current stopgap funding bill runs out November 17th. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
Right-wing Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz tells CNN he'll force a vote to remove the leader of the House because of his support for the spending bill.
I do intend to file a motion to vacate against Speaker McCarthy this week. I think we need to rip off the Band-Aid. I think we need to move on with new leadership that can be trustworthy.
McCarthy was asked about Gaetz's plan by the moderator of CBS's Face the Nation, Margaret Brennan.
He says he's coming for you. Can you survive?
Yes, I'll survive.
More restrictive gun laws now in effect in Connecticut, says WFSB-TV's Aaliyah Redd.
Major changes include limit bulk purchasing to 3 handguns in a 3-day period, expansion to storage laws, and the ban of open carrying of firearms. Now, that means if you have a permit that you can still carry, but the firearm cannot be seen in public.
Gun rights advocates are suing the state over the law. They say it violates their Second Amendment rights. Former President Carter reached a major milestone today, says CBS's Mark Strassman.
Happy birthday to you.
They're celebrating a birthday in Tiny Plains, Georgia.
Grab a cupcake.
Jimmy Carter's birthplace 99 years ago today. When Carter entered hospice back in February, his family thought he had days to live. 7 months later, he's earned all this birthday fuss. Jimmy and Rosalind Carter will celebrate the day with family, fried chicken, and caramel cake, his favorite.
Federal student loan borrowers have to resume payments today. CNET's Nick Wolny says some may qualify for a new income-based repayment plan.
Previously, your maximum monthly payment would be calculated based on a percentage of your discretionary income. That used to be 10%, and now it is 5%. So effectively, your student loan payment is going to be cut in half.
This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. A former Wisconsin U.S. senator is speaking out against the idea of a constitutional convention. Russ Feingold warns it would push through sweeping new right-wing policies. Suzanne Potter reports.
Right-wing groups such as the Federalist Society say they want to require a balanced budget and limit the power to tax, moves critics say would lead to huge cuts in Medicare, Social Security, education, Medicaid, and environmental protection. Duke University professor Nancy McLean notes that Article 5 of the Constitution requires consent from just two-thirds of states to call for a convention.
The organizers of the convention effort have made clear the votes taken would not be based on population, but on one vote per state, so as to grossly underrepresent the majority of Americans.
That would give outsized influence to states with tiny populations, such as Wyoming, at the expense of huge states like California. Over the years, many states have called for a constitutional convention on specific topics. Conservative groups argue that the requests could be aggregated to reach the 34-state threshold and force a convention. Former Wisconsin Senator Russ Feingold, now with the American Constitution Society, just wrote a book that warns that a convention is likely if Republicans win full control of Congress next year.
They're asserting that you can mix and match these, and that meets the constitutional requirements. It's not right, and the Supreme Court doesn't appear to have the authority to step in and stop it.
Jonathan Mehta Stein with Common Cause California says the risk of a runaway convention is too great because there are very few rules in place. I'm Suzanne Potter. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
And you're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Uh-oh, did a rock hit your windshield from that semi? Don't worry, Autoglass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Autoglass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Autoglass Now today for full details.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
He shouldn't even have BLTs. They're a terrible sandwich.
Oh, I love BLTs.
So do I.
The one deli sandwich I could have.
Greg, don't yuck my yum, dude. I will.
We've already established on this show today that Greg is happy to judge people's yums.
Bring me your yums, for I am the yum judge.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media, too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
Hi, this is Luann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
With that brief introduction of me, I am excited to introduce Alan Borsick. You can tell us a bit. I just know you from education and your reporting for a number of years.
That's true. I was a longtime reporter and editor at the Milwaukee Journal and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and developed a big interest in education and covered that for quite a number of years. I left the newspaper in 2009 in one of the many rounds of staff reductions. They were paying people to go away, and I said, oh, I think I'll take the money. And started a short time later at Marquette Law School. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't teach anyone. No one knows what I do. Well, that's not quite true. I work on the public policy projects that we have at the law school, including the political poll that we do. The bulk of my time is spent working on the law school magazine, and I still write pieces for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on K-12 education. So that's continued to be kind of my specialty issue.
So if I could go back a little bit, were you always interested in journalism as a young boy, or when did you figure out that was going to be your career path and personal mission, sort of?
It just sort of happened. It's, I suppose, a long story. I started working. I grew up in Madison, and I had a friend who was working as a newsroom assistant. Frankly, at that time, they were called copy boys because it was tough work. Only boys could do it. It involved lifting up paper, things like that. These days we would call them messengers. So he was working there, and they needed another person, and he called me and said, you want a job? I started on my 16th birthday, and I've worked in newsrooms from then until, well, I don't actually work in a newsroom anymore, but I still have a news presence. So that's, oh goodness gracious, 57 years.
Okay, so that's in your life's journey.
I liked being in newsrooms, and I just ended up sticking with it.
How did you end up in Milwaukee?
I got a job at the Milwaukee Journal, right smack out of college. I married. We graduated from UW-Madison. We got married. We moved to Milwaukee, and I started at the Milwaukee Journal all in the space of a week. It was the week of Watergate, in fact. But my wife is a native Milwaukeean, and in fact grew up not too far from where we live now on the northwest side of Milwaukee. And thought I'd go, I worked for a newspaper for a year and then go back to grad school or law school. And so far I haven't made it back, except that now I work at a law school, which my mother was pleased by that. She always wanted me to go to law school, so I ended up working at one. But I'm as I said, not a lawyer myself.
Okay. So I do want to ask one more journalism question. We'll get back into education. But what was your, I guess, like you mentioned, Watergate, over the years, what story most, I guess, was most interesting to you or, yeah, most interesting or important? Or were there a couple? What was that like?
Boy, I don't...
Being in journalism all those years.
A single story, I don't know. I just liked being out there where things were happening and being able to witness them, talk to people. You know, being a reporter gives you an excuse to ask people questions that otherwise you'd probably get arrested for. So I've been able to see lots of, let's see, important events, even on a national basis occasionally. And I never was that fond of covering politics, but I did a lot. I did some things that, you know, really did stick with me. I once did a story on open heart surgery, including standing next to the surgeon while he was doing open heart surgery. You know, that kind of thing is fairly dramatic. I spent nearly a year back in the 1980s working.